International Broadcasting lives on 5085. The big one, WTWW.
Please stand by as we get ready to launch another episode of this Reality Radio Cafe Cast with your host and my husband, Denny J, K5DCC.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. Ignition, lift off.
Now grab your glass and get ready to fill it up with some radio on the rocks.
Vehicle's pitching downrange.
Well, greetings, Ilya. Welcome to the cafe. Folks, we have KI5VEX just came into the cafe. And Ilya, come on in and sit down at the table with us. Grab yourself a cup of coffee and let's have a little conversation.
By all means, I already have some cup of tea. So too much coffee for today, I guess. So move to the tea. And really exciting being with you here.
Well, thank you. Am I pronouncing your name correctly, Ilya?
Yeah. It's actually, you know, it's interesting. Actually, it's Ilya, but nobody can pronounce this correctly. So I get used to Ilya. It's fine.
Okay. Well, before we get going here, your microphone sounds like you're way far away. I'm getting a lot of echo, like you're in a big room.
Let me see.
If you can get closer to your microphone, that'd be better.
Yeah, I will see if the right microphone was selected. Let me see how I can change the mic.
All righty. I'm using a trucker headset, one earpiece, Bluetooth. Headset here, which cuts out any background noise. Am I sounding okay?
Yeah, you're sounding okay, but I understand that my voice is not good. So let me see how I can change here the microphone.
No problem. Are you on a Windows machine or a Mac?
No, it's Mac.
Okay.
Because I have...
No problem.
I have a good microphone, so it actually should work fine.
Oh, I bet you it would. Anyway... While he's getting his mic straightened out here, I'm talking with Ilya Zilber from Austin, Texas. He's an amateur radio operator, a friend that I've met on John Portoon's Zoom session. We get together, and actually he's kind of interested in building a mag loop antenna using PVC pipe and aluminum foil tape, which, by the way, I've got mine running out on the front porch underneath a metal roof, doing some FT8 and making contacts all over the place. I guess you saw my pictures, huh?
I did. And by the way, is it better, Mike, now? Can you hear me better?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I changed it.
It does sound much better.
Awesome. So, yeah, I saw it, and I was really wondering how you get the good signal reports, especially taking into consideration that you are under the metal roof and basically not too high, right? And it was amazing to see that the signal reports coming even higher than what the people give, what the signal report you were giving to the people. So I was really amazed.
I was too. I haven't used it for quite a while. And I thought, well, I'm just going to tweak this up a little bit. I've been experimenting with some of the ideas that John Portoon had for maybe changing bands, like putting on top of the top element a full-length piece with some aluminum foil tape on it, and that changes it. It actually lowers the frequency of it, and then you can still use your inner tube to fine-tune it to a band. So that little 3-foot mag loop, I can be on 60 meters, 10 meters, 12 meters, and 15 meters. By just adjusting and putting this half shell on top of it. So anyway, I'm just using it without that, just the tuning tube inside the capacitor tube. I've got an SWR of 1:1, and I've got it hooked up to my Yaesu FT950, and I'm just amazed with how well it works under that roof. It'd be much better if I had it out of the yard, but it's kind of icy and snowy out there today, so I just kept it on the porch.
Oh, yeah, I understand. By the way, it's very icy here in Texas now, in Austin, Texas, which is kind of really, really weird situation. We usually have pretty warm temperature. Right now it's 32 degrees, so they cancel schools, and I'm not sure if supermarkets are open. But it's my antenna is still in the working state, so I'm still applying the foil to the PVC, and I still need to make it looks like antenna. Right now it's kind of disassembled state. But sure. I'm looking forward to see how it will work. And everybody's saying it's basically amazing. The performance and efficiency is amazing, considering the size. I really want to see if it can be, if I can achieve the same efficiency.
Which size are you making?
So I'm making size. This was originally published by John, which is 40. I think it's 45. Inch, if I remember correctly. It's 42 plus on the right and left side, so it's kind of 45, if I remember correctly. It should be fine on 10 meters, 20 meters, and 40 meters for me.
Well, that's great.
Basically, the bands I really work in is 10, 20, and 40, and 10 meters is just amazing for the last couple of weeks. It's just working so well for me. I was able to talk to people in Europe, in Russia, in the middle of Russia. So I never thought I could get there. So.
Right, right. Well, judging by your accent, I would say you're from over in Europe originally too, correct?
That's correct. I was born in Lithuania like 50 years ago. I was born in Lithuania. I was living there for about 16 years. Then I moved to Israel, was living there for about 30 years. And then I came here to US. So living here in the U.S. in Austin, Texas. But yeah, my accent I cannot get rid of. I tried hard.
Oh, very good. Well, you've been a ham for a while, I take it. Why don't you go ahead and tell us your story? What was it that got you interested in amateur radio, and maybe describe the process and how you got to where you're at today?
Yeah, it's an interesting story. I was dealing a lot with ham radio when I was really in the school. So I was soldering new projects, making sure they work, and playing a lot with electronics. But that was when I was in high school. And basically, when I moved to Israel and started my college, I almost forgot about this and never touched it until basically 1 year ago, when I realized I need something for emergency. You know how it starts? I need something for emergency. And I was looking like, what should be really important for emergency? Communication. So how I do communication? And I was started looking to this, and I realized, wow, it's actually an old hobby that I almost forgot about. And I started with digital radio, just to try how it works and will it suit my needs. And I don't know, I personally tried DMR, I tried a couple of others, and it's nice, it's working good, but I still was feeling I'm missing something. And the part that I was really missing is HF radio. So I went, did all the upgrade license to General, then to Extra, and bought the second-hand FT-991A. Amazing, by the way, amazing rig. It's kind of solved all my problems that I had. And I get on HF, and I started working with HF. And then I realized basically two things that I enjoy. You know, you get an FT-8. I tried FT8 hard, and I do have FT8 system in place. I feel like it's interesting, but I miss communication, personal SSB communication. I realized I really like talking to the people, and in the beginning, I needed basically to push myself through the some kind of anxiety to start speaking on the radio, right, on HF, and I'm technical salesperson, so I do speak with a lot of people generally. On the radio, I felt like, oh, what will I say? And I'm not really, you know, was super confident how I will manage the conversation. So that was another thing that I like about HF radio and SSB. When you start talking to the people across the globe, not just in the US, but across the globe, in Latin America, in Europe, everybody is different. Everybody has different interests. And you can find the mutual interest and talk about. And that was fascinating. That's a miracle for me because, yeah, you can do it on Zoom. You probably can do this over the WhatsApp or whatever, but that's not the same. That has some magic. You know, HF has some magic in it, in my opinion. So I came to this basically just saying, like, I need emergency service. I need emergency radio. If something will happen, I need to have this. And then I just realized how I can enjoy day-to-day conversation with people across the globe. And I try not to be a lot on the context. It's not a sport to me. I don't care how many contacts I will do per day. If it will be one or two, which is really interesting, that's what I'm looking for. And it's cool. I like it.
So very good. Now,
that's kind of my story.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Looking at your bio here on QRZ, I see you are into technology. Are you still a cybersecurity engineer?
Yeah, I'm still a cybersecurity engineer. I was working for 25 years for IBM across the globe, amazing company. Learned a lot and was helping a lot of customers with their cybersecurity issues, threats. And we know that, especially now, that's not simple. A lot of things going on. And the cyber war is still here and will continue to be here. And now I work in a different company that take care about the identity, securing the identity, making sure how we protect the identity. And by the way, there is implication for the ham radio as well. You know, when there is emergency and there are people who on the radio, how you actually know that the person who says he's KF5EX, he's really KF5EX, right?
Right.
And it's maybe some person with, you know, some bad stuff in place. And he pretends to be somebody else and say, oh, we have an emergency here. We need a police force or whatever. And it's actually just to distract the actual police force from coming to the real places. So that's an interesting point that we definitely need to look at and see how we can be sure that somebody who claims he really is, and should we have something in place that can be verified? I don't know. I don't have a solution. Just saying that it can be interesting. Identity definitely will be one of my focuses in the near future, how we can protect identity, how we can verify.
Right. Well, as you know, working with DMR, before they came up with the scheme of having to have a password to access a network, it was very easy to fake an account on a hotspot. You could put in anybody's call sign and DMR ID and transmit into a particular talk group or something. You probably realized that, didn't you?
Exactly. There is no real verification. So when I did the license to be VE, there was verification, right? I need to go to ARRL and I need to submit my photo ID and do some other verification. Then they send me the, I think there was certificate that I can be VE and so on. So there was some sort, some verification of identity. In the digital radio right now, there is none. Not just digital, in general in radio, it's almost non-verification who you are. Right. Anybody can basically claim any call sign. And unless you really know the person, you cannot say if it's him or not. And it's not a problem day to day, I guess. It's okay. Nobody really cares. But it is a problem when emergency happens.
Yeah, for sure. And well, heard recently they say the next big event that's going to happen is probably going to be a cyber attack. Would you agree with that?
I definitely agree with this. And I believe, in my opinion, you know, in many cases, it will be some infrastructure that will be attacked. It can be water. It can be electricity. It can be anything, basically, but it will be essential services. And in my opinion, it will be a ransom attack in many cases when the people will try to get some money. Usually, Bitcoin will be used for this. I feel like we are just in the beginning of the cycle of protection of these services against the bad guys, the bad actors that probably across the globe will target our infrastructure and any, you know, any services that's available for us. And we should do our job really good, because it can cause a lot of harm, right? And it's not anymore like a small hacker steal some money from somebody. It's a big issue that need to be addressed. And I'm sure authorities are doing a lot to address this. So it's definitely happening.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on digital ID? I hear a lot of talk about that coming out, possibly even by the end of the year.
Yeah, it's a good question. You always ask yourself, is it good or bad? So there are some things where it's really good, and you really would like to identify people sometimes, even especially with ChatGPT that you probably heard about.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And you can record your voice, and you can ask artificial intelligence speak with your voice. So think about this. Your friend is calling you with his voice and say, look, I had an accident. I need some Venmo right now, or whatever, right? It will be difficult to really understand that this is not the guy who is claiming to be, right? So digital ID can help to verify who is who. From other side, how you protect the privacy here? And that's a big, I think it's a big discussion. Do we have a privacy actually, right? Everybody has a cell phone. So everybody has applications. We track everything you do, everything you buy. Do we have a privacy, or we have a perception of the privacy? And that's a big question. I don't know the answer, but I think we don't have a choice. We will get to the digital ID. The question is what protection we will have in place for the privacy. And that's probably what the discussion will be around, in my opinion.
Right, right. Well, back to ChatGPT. I just was on it a little while ago. And I noticed they've got another update that happened yesterday to make it a little bit more accurate. They've been rather incorrect on some responses. In particular, I tried one with John Portoon at one of our, I think it was the week before session. We had it ask, how do you build a particular kind of antenna? I think he's doing a square dipole or something. And I read back the answer, and it was totally wrong. So it needs some help, but I find myself turning to ChatGPT for all kinds of answers to questions regarding radio. Maybe you've played with it too.
Yeah, and it's fascinating how the progress of AI is happening now, how much progress of this is. Basically, if you look at ChatGPT 1 year ago, if you look now, it's a huge progress. If we will assume that the same progress will continue in a couple of years from now, we will have a really good artificial intelligence engine that definitely will be able to answer the question how to build the square antenna. It's just a matter of time. And it's also a bit strange to see that many of the things that we believe need to be done by human being now can be done by ChatGPT, including, for example, if you want to have a very nice picture of, you know, the lake and mountains and the trees, and it should be winter, you can ask for this now, and AI will create you a perfectly nice picture. And you will it will be a difficult job to realize this is artificial and not the real one taken by a photographer. Yep. So it's an interesting time we're living in.
Yeah, I was just reading some stories today about deep fake video, which led me down a rabbit trail, and I was blown away with what they're already doing with deep fake. I mean, if you look at it closely, you can kind of tell that the mouth's not quite totally in sync with the audio, but man, it's close. And the details and the face and the hair, it's mind-blowing where this is going.
Yeah. And if you think, I guess one of the biggest challenges will be when this technology will be so sophisticated, so the reality can be substituted by some AI, and you know, you'll see the short movie about how somebody did somebody to somebody else, and you will try to prove that in the court, and it will be really difficult to understand if it's true or not, because it can be falsificated very easily, because AI will do the great job. So how you will be able to prove that this is fake, for example? And that's a big question, right? Because it's just a matter of maybe a couple of years until we will have extremely well engine that will be able to put my face on somebody else's movie and say, oh, that's Ilya is playing in the movie. You know, it's will be interesting.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of scary at the same time. Anyway, I'm waiting for the day when ChatGPT, when it'll become connected to the internet and all the data will be up to date every time you access it. So I can just say, who is this call sign? And it'll give me all the details about you.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, I think this day is really close, especially for these type of queries. I guess it's really, really close. It will be more difficult for artificial intelligence to process really complicated speech, which will take some time, I guess. But they will get there. It's just matter of time, matter of effort. And I think the biggest problem right now for Google is actually ChatGPT, because if Google will not do anything in a couple of years, they will become pretty obsolete.
Yeah. Well, right now Microsoft is demonstrating their interest in it by dumping another $10 billion into OpenAI. So they're pretty serious about it, and it'll be part of their search system there at Bing.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody see a lot of money that they can create by investing in AI and getting some good results. And the funny enough, you know, I started my career in IBM when we really were after scanning handwritten forms and try to understand what was written on this form. And forms were pretty simple, and still it was really difficult to process the handwriting of some letters. And this was all English, not even local languages, or just plain English, Latin, ABC. And if I look right now, we all do this automatically without any issue. We can process almost all letters, we can automatically convert them to the text, and the number of errors is extremely small. So technology is really moving fast, and we will see a lot of things going on very soon, I guess. It's amazing time, actually. It's especially AI. The question is, what will happen, for example, for the jobs that can be replaced by AI? And that's an easy question.
Well, I'm 71. I'm beyond years, and I'm glad to leave it behind. I'm not too worried, but I do worry for my kids and grandkids. It's going to change the world. It's like one guy said, I watched a YouTube video, and he said, this is as big as the Gutenberg press.
Indeed, indeed. And we already had some revolutions, you know, when we replaced the horses with the cars and so on, and a lot of people changed the way they work and earn the money. I guess we just nearby something pretty similar when a lot of jobs will become obsolete. So we need to be ready to be prepared to educate the people who will be forced to be out of the employer market to do something else.
Yeah. Well, I kind of did that myself. I was in the printing trade in pre-press. And when the Macintosh came out, I bought the first one. And I could see the future changing for my career. I was a stripper on a light table, and we did things kind of the old-fashioned way. But I could see this happening digitally. And so I bought all the software and trained myself, told my fellow workers, you better get on board with this or you're going to be left behind. And they just laughed at me. Nah, nobody's going to take our job away. Well, within a few short years, they were coming to me. Hey, can you do this on your computer? I said, piece of cake. So I'd whip it up, and then they'd print out the film and everything, you know, and pretty soon it was going into four color, you know, with the page making and all that stuff, page imposition. And I moved on. I ended up moving to a very high-tech pre-press company, and all my buddies stayed with the company that folded, and they all lost their jobs. So yeah, you got to stay on the cusp of these waves, and don't be afraid of them, but at the same time, beware of potential for abuse. And like we talked about that with ham radio, there are people that will take advantage of it and abuse it. And there's been stories of ongoing people in other countries that are just belligerently breaking the rules and seem to get away with it. Not that it hurts anybody, but anyway, so I've been a ham for 50 years and I've seen a lot of change. I come from CW days and single sideband AM, nothing fancy, but boy, have we seen changes since the internet revolution came on board, and now they're married together. I mean, you can't hardly do ham radio without a computer anymore, can you?
Yeah, it's but we still, you're right, we use computers, at least QRZ. You need to go to QRZ, right, and look up the call sign, see the who is the person behind this. So computer is always open, and FT8 is running in the background sometime, and some other stuff, locked word and all this. But you know, and I was asking myself, so everything we do on HF, for example, or even in, especially in digital, we all can have some chat groups in Zoom and some other technology. It doesn't matter, technology is not, doesn't really matter. So we can do this over the internet. So why are we still doing this on HF? Why are we still doing this on VHF, for example, right? There is some magic in this, in my opinion. That's why people are still doing this, because they need to do something which is not so trivial to make sure it's working, right? They feel satisfaction when it's working. It's from my side. Maybe I'm wrong, but from my side, I feel really satisfaction when, you know, when it's working well, when I put my new antenna. So it's part of the hobby, which is, you cannot go all, you know, all internet. You need this part of the hobby. You need this uncertainty when you build the antenna. You have no idea if it will work or not work. And it's, when it's working, you're really excited about this. So, yeah, change is happening. We're definitely adapting. We used the pencil to write all the QSOs. And now I don't use a pencil anymore. I just, you know, go directly to computer. And that's fine, but I still continue to use my radio, right? I still build my antennas, and I enjoy this.
Yeah, it's fascinating to get into what makes radio work, understanding electromagnetic energy and radio waves, and how radios can receive and transmit the whole of that. It's really quite thrilling. I've never outgrown that thrill. I'm just as excited when I make a transmission on HF now as I was when I was 17 years old. It just blows my mind that I can key the mic, say something, and my voice is heard around the world in a split second. It's just incredible.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing, I'm also looking at, you mentioned CW. I'm also looking in CW, and it's kind of outdated, right? You can say, who's using CW? Well, actually, the number of people who are using CW in a couple of last years grow significantly. So it's a really interesting trend that the people try to do something which is more difficult to challenge themselves. I don't think they're doing this just because the propagation is better and a weak signal can go farther or whatever. I think they challenge themselves. They want to have a challenge that they overcome, and they able to learn and do CW, which is not so easy to do, I would say, right? So right. A lot about this hobby, which is also challenge yourself and do something you did not do before, and try to learn something new.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because right in the middle of your story, I got a text from a good friend of mine. Playing SKCC, Straight Key Century Club. That's just a straight key Morse code, and you make members of that group. And so it's always a challenge to keep it going. After all, it is the original digital dots. Yes. And dashes, ones and zeros, if you want to think of digital that way.
Yeah, indeed. You know, the only thing which I really like about digital myself, I installed, I think it's called WinLink, if I remember correctly. I installed the mail client that's using the HF for transmitting and getting emails. And this mostly for emergency side of my hobby. just to make sure that if needed, I can relay messages to somebody else who is also on WinLink network. This kind of digital really, really speaks to me because I don't care in day-to-day use to send emails like this, but I do care when emergency happens. So I will have some kind of infrastructure to send emails to my kids. And by the way, you're talking about my kids. So my kids, they have the technician license.
Great.
And as teenagers, they're not, you know, usually they have a lot of different things to do other than using the radio and so on. But I do feel that they learned something when they did this license, and they do have some interest of doing this. And one day, if I will need to come to them and say, look, guys, we need to have this emergency communication. Here is the radio. Let's put, you know, my daughter, she's in Dallas, for example. Let's put antenna in Dallas. Let's have the radio in Dallas, and let's make sure we can communicate. They don't know what I'm talking about. So I think it's not for nothing.
Well, as far as MCOM, I'm kind of into MCOM too, and I'm always looking for reliable modes that I can use in case of a grid down situation where we have no internet. And I've really landed on JS8 call. Have you heard of that?
Yeah. There are a couple, I think. I tried, it didn't really work well for me. I also tried, I think it was called 3DB, and also J something call. So it's basically kind of the voice over the HF in digital format, right? That's what you're talking about.
FreeDV is the one where it changes the digital to audio. But you just mentioned that the JS8 call is basically built on the FT8 protocol, but it allows you to actually have text messages back and forth over HF.
Right.
And the thing I like about it is on one frequency, you can have dozens of conversations going at the same time. So it's not like you're chasing around the frequencies to find people like you would on some other digital modes. Right there in the standard frequency, like on 20 meters, it's 14.074. No, that would be FT8. Just up a little bit higher is 14.078. One frequency, but you can have like 30 conversations going at the same time because they're all broken up into little audio portions of the audio.
Right. And I installed this on my computer. I played with this a little bit, really a little bit. I probably need to come back to this and see how it works. I realize it's more about something that you can really participate in the discussions, which are multiple discussions at the same time. And you have these slots. I think it's really short slots when you transmit and listen, right? I need to try this. That's actually a good point. I install it. I tried for a couple of minutes, and I didn't have enough time to look really into this.
Yeah, you should try it. I'll be glad to connect a particular frequency on every band. Actually, 40 is popular. And what I do is I'll throw out a heartbeat first just to see how many are hearing me. I'll look at the responses, and the one that gives me the strongest signal report back, I'll go ahead and give him a call, acknowledge the signal report, and greet him, and invariably they'll come back and we'll have quite a long conversation back and forth. So it really is pretty slick. Now, I know, hearing from a lot of my friends up here, people don't like to type. They've never taken it in school, or just very slow, you know, one finger pecking, and it's just too frustrating. But if you know how to type, it's a wonderful platform.
Right. By the way, I didn't try this in this program, but I guess now we have so many software that you can click, and instead of typing, you technically can say, and this will type instead of you, right? So
I haven't seen that in any of this software yet, but I imagine it'll get there. Another interesting one is called VaraChat, which is very unique, and it's a little wider band spectrum. You have to actually jump off of the calling frequency up or down 750 hertz to continue a conversation. But it like makes a connection, and then you type back and forth. You can actually send files, small files, if the signal strength is high. But that's another one I've been playing around with. And that would be a good one for MCOM too. But anyway.
Yep, that's amazing. The only challenge, I guess, is we have so many different digital modes. It's a good and bad at the same time, right? It's good because it's really everybody testing something different, and it's a little bit bad or that you don't know what to try even because there's so many different, right? And it's on so many different frequencies. In many cases, like 3dB, you can come to the frequency, nobody there.
Right.
For a long time, and it's take time until you can even try this.
Well, it's like my paradigm for ham radio is this cafe theme. You know, you go through, it's like a buffet. So you go through the line, it's full of all kinds of selections and entrees. And what you do is you pick what you like and you leave the rest. And you don't badmouth something you don't like. You know, people, when we first started getting into some of the digital, some of the old timers would put down the new technology. Nah, that's not ham radio, blah, blah, blah. You know, you'd have the divisions in the family. But the cafe too is like, you've got all these tables, not just the entrees, but you got different tables. And even that is splitting up so many ways now. Like you say, you've got DMR and D-Star and Fusion and All-Star Link and all kinds of stuff. But then in each one of those modes, you've got hundreds of talk groups or reflectors or whatever. So everybody is scattered all over the place and they don't get a chance to really get to know as many people. I think I remember back getting into HF days as a young person, man, the HF bands were so crowded. You could barely squeak in between them to start a conversation, but now it's pretty empty because everybody's going to the digital modes. And speaking of which, you're from Israel. Did you know Rich and some of the guys over there that were part of the All-Star Network?
No. I actually, my ham radio really started here. So in Israel, okay. I was not really interested in this. So never.
Very good. Well, it's been wonderful having you drop by the cafe. Thank you very much for sharing your story, Ilya. And I look forward to seeing you every Monday if you check into John Partoon's session. I learned so much. Didn't you find that quite fascinating, his description of coax as a three conductor?
Yeah. I heard the description before, but this was really interesting. That's really three conductors. I mean, technically it's two, right? But from our RF perspective, we have three conductors there. Yeah, it's the first time I heard this, I said, no way, how from outside of the coax. But then when you go deeper and understand, it's fascinating. And that's why his approach with the foil is working so well. Because it's really, I mean, it's simple, but it's the same way, genius, right? Well, why we need all these expensive pipes when really it's not used for the RF? If we really use, the foil is more than enough, and it's just amazing. And it's simple, but I never thought about this myself.
Yeah. Oh, it's really opened my understanding up of how antennas work. And for those listening, you might have just peaked up your ears there. What are you talking about, three conductor and coax? That's only two conductor. Well, let me give you the short explanation of what John Partoon shared with us. You've got one conductor in the center. That's just a solid piece of copper. Its skin effect is on the outside of that. Then on the shield, it's like a donut wrapped around that. And you've got the inside of the shielded part. That skin effect there is separate from the skin effect on the outside of that shield.
Yep.
Totally independent from what's on the inside. So you literally have a three conductor lead feed. So he recommends taking the coax a few times to create a choke, which shuts down that common current that appears on the outside. And I always used to think, common current on the outside, is that like on the plastic? I never understood. It's actually on the outside of the inner of the underneath that plastic in your shielding that's carrying a separate current. Never heard that before in 50 years of being a ham.
And you know what's fascinating? That the current can go in different ways, directions, from inside the conductor and outside of the conductor. So it may be different directions of the current even. So it's really amazing. Yeah.
And John, John's a physics major in college, so he understands a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, by all means. And, you know, it's interesting. I found John on the YouTube. I just saw one of his presentation to one of the clubs. And then I went to his website. And he mentioned a couple of interesting things on his website. And he also mentioned he has this meeting every Monday morning. And said, let me try to join. He said, it's open. And I joined. And that's another great thing about the ham radio. You know, I never encounter anyone, yet at least, I never encounter anyone who would say, no, don't join us. We don't want you to hear what we say, or we don't care about you. You don't know anything. It was always welcome and warming. It's really nice to, you know, to have this discussion around people who are welcome you, who welcome and okay, if you don't know something, they will explain. And it's just an amazing feeling. You're just around very kind people. That's amazing about the ham radio.
Yeah. Are you part of a club down there in Austin?
So, yeah, I'm part of a couple of clubs. There is an Austin club here in Austin. There is UT club, which is University of Texas club here in Austin as well. There is another club that I'm also part of. I try to help where I can. So we do some sessions for to license people, and I amazed how many people want to get licensed and how many young people want to get licensed. That's always amazing to me. So I'm participating in BE program. And I try to be, you know, some clubs, for example, that I'm participating, it's more like listening and we don't have a lot of activities. And some club we really meet and do something. So that's kind of different. Everyone has slightly different approach to how clubs should look like, right? So I enjoy being part of a couple of clubs and just see what the activity each one of them have and which activity is most suited for what I like.
Right. Well, I'm a member of the Northwest Arkansas Amateur Radio Club, and we have a Telegram channel, which I think you're in. You stumbled across us, and welcome.
Yeah.
You don't have to. Well, in fact, I guess if you're in our group, you're a member of the club, because we're not a strict membership per se, where you got to pay dues and everything. We don't ask for dues at all. And we have a monthly meeting. We have Monday nights. We have our UHF net. And just check in and make sure everybody's radios are working and talk a little bit about plans in the future, whatnot. But I've just opened up the chat part of that for anyone who wants to drop in. We're going to start at 9 o'clock every morning. And any of the people in our club or outside the club that are interested in sitting down and discussing radio issues or antenna issues, or people that aren't even hams, can come in and ask questions about what the hobby's like. And course, with this, you can also do screen sharing. We could do PowerPoint presentations like John does, and bring in guests to maybe give their stories, or, you know, share what their expertise is. So it should be kind of interesting. I hope we can get some people interested. But as you know, not all hams are even very technical. They just want to talk. They just want to have an emergency radio for maybe a situation where everything else goes down. So. But, you know, it's like a buffet. There's something for everybody.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody can pick up something they like. You know, the emergency radio, it's a good point. You know, I have my small emergency radios for everyone in my family, just in case if I will need this. And who knows, you know, when you really need this, usually you cannot go and buy it. So you need to be ahead of this.
Right.
So I'll be happy to join the sessions of the club and just see, you know, if I can participate and listen to you, or maybe even tell some story.
We'd love to have you. And by the way, are you licensed in the GMRS world?
No, I'm not. I understand the GMRS is more like the radio for marine, if I understand correctly, for boats, and I'm not really using it and don't have license.
Oh, okay. No, it's marine radio is totally different. This is general mobile radio. You don't have to take a test. You just buy a license. It costs you, I think, $35 or maybe $35 now. It's good for 10 years, and absolutely everybody in your family can use that license. And the radios are very similar to your HTs for ham radio. It's in the UHF spectrum. There are many, many repeaters all around the country, and many of them are linked together using asterisk on like an all-star node type of deal, using that technology. So they're bridging them all together. And these guys are just as technical about this stuff. In fact, many of them are hams already, but we like to think of GMRS as the gateway to ham radio.
Yeah, I really need to look at this. I went the more difficult road, right? I asked everybody in my family to get the formal, at least technician license. And as I guess it's much more difficult than, like you said, just buying the GRMS license and without actually having any tests, I understand, right? But I need to look at this. I need to see how this works and what advantage it has over, you know, just regular VHF, UHF. And we have a lot of repeaters here when I live, at least like 7 repeaters that I can work easily. I definitely will look at this, but never tried it.
Very good. Well, it's been 45 minutes. I've really enjoyed the chat, and thank you for dropping by the cafe here. It was a very interesting story, and look forward to seeing you regularly on some of these other platforms like Zoom and Telegram. And I don't know when we'll get in touch on radio, but maybe on 40 meters sometime, we can just work up a schedule and see if we can talk on sideband or maybe state call or something.
Sure, sure. And thank you very much for having me. Danny, have a wonderful day.
You too. Shalom, shalom.
Shalom, shalom. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hi, this is Extra Class Amateur Radio Operator, K5DCC. I just upgraded to my Extra Class last year. You know how I did it? I used HamTest Online. Did you know that HamTest Online is the top-rated study program on eham.net? 97% of reviewers gave them 5 stars. They have more 5-star user reviews than all other study methods combined, and success is guaranteed. If you fail the amateur radio license exam, they will refund your subscription. It's a no-brainer. You pass the exam or get a full refund. Try it for yourself at hamtestonline.com.